With the prospect of comprehensive immigration reform withering on the vine and with the ongoing controversy over child migrants at the U.S. border, we actually thought we'd take a look at the ways in which the system is working, namely the 1 million or so people who were granted green cards last year. They became the latest group of legal permanent residents in the United States. Now, a green card is the ultimate prize for would-be immigrants across the globe, but getting one is actually very difficult, and in some cases, it's a matter of sheer luck. Here in Now's Peter O'Dowd has been digging into the current numbers. Hi, Peter.
Hi there.
So first of all, there's been so much talk about illegal immigration in the United States right now. But what paths do people actually have to get here legally?
The vast majority of every person who gets a green card is because they have some close family tie in the United States. It works out to about 2/3 of all green cards. The next category, the big category, is employment. So that's 15% of all the green cards are going because of employment connections. And then there's a category for refugees and asylum seekers. And finally, the lottery.
The green card lottery. Okay, so we're going to talk about that in just a minute. But we mentioned a moment ago that a million green cards were granted last year. What nations are these folks coming from?
The top four nations really haven't changed much in the last decade. Number one, Mexico. It's something like 135,000 out of that approximate million come from Mexico. And that makes sense because if you think about it, Mexico is so close to the United States. For generations, people have been crossing back and forth across the border. And so those family connections are really strong. Now you have India and China that are usually always in second and third place. Now these are obviously the most populous countries in the world. And so it makes sense that they'd be sending more people to the United States. The fourth country is the Philippines, and it has been like this for a long, long time. And I thought that was interesting because the Philippines is, you know, nowhere near the size of India and China. So I talked to Mark Rosenblum from the Migration Policy Institute in Washington, and he told me why the Philippines shows up so high every single year.
A lot of that migration began after World War II, you know, with war brides and you know, I mean, the U.S. has a long colonial legacy in the Philippines. So countries that have large U.S. populations have a lot of family members in the U.S. who can sponsor relatives and also have employment connections. You know, people often hire, you know, their co-nationals or people they know, you know, from where they've come from.
So those family connections again, but he also mentioned jobs and employment. Now, there is a way for investors, foreign investors, to sort of buy their way into a green card.
That's right. That's called the EB-5 visa. It's a tiny little sliver. About 8,000 green cards were given out that way last year. Now, here's an example of how this works. There's a place called Jay Peak Resorts up in Vermont. Now, this is a part of that state that had been very economically depressed for a while. So the developer pooled together EB-5 investors, about 600 of these investors. If they put in $500,000 and created 10 jobs, they would be able to get a green card. Now, the Jay Peak Resorts was able to build this big project. There's a lodge, there's a water park, there's an ice arena. 600 investors came together and were able to get this project off the ground. Now, there's examples like this all across the country in these economically depressed areas where investor visas make sense.
But as you said, on the flip side, they have to invest at least $500,000 each and create at least 10 jobs.
That's right. And if they don't do that, if for some reason in the first 2 years their investment fails or they don't create those 10 jobs, they don't get their visa. After the 2 years, it doesn't matter. They can go to business and they still get to stay in the country.
Interesting. Okay, so let's talk about one of the oldest ways to get a green card in the United States, and that's the lottery. So for people who aren't familiar with the fact that there is even anything that has to do with the lottery and U.S. immigration, explain how it works.
Right. So sometimes all of this just comes down to chance. It's called the diversity lottery. What the United States government tries to do here is to draw people from countries that we don't get a lot of people from. So Mexico, Canada, India, they're not eligible for the lottery. I did find a woman who won very recently. Her name is Annabelle Neist. She's from Australia. She's a college grad. She studied journalism. And she applied unsuccessfully for the lottery back in 2011. But then in 2012, she tried again. And she was one of about 240 Australians who won the drawing that year. Listen to part of the conversation that I had with her.
This was a kind of like a last-ditch effort because, yeah, that to me, that was the only way that I was really ever going to be able to come back and stay here for longer than a couple months as a tourist.
How did you find that you won?
The day I found out, I mean, I had like gotten up at midnight US time and was logging on and trying to get in, but the website broke down because so many people were trying to get onto it. So it ended up that I had to like get onto Skype with my sister who lived in London, and for some reason she could access it and I couldn't. And she was the one that kind of copied and pasted the letter that I got saying you've been selected and was like, what does this mean? And I just started bawling my eyes out. Just, I mean, even to this day when I tell people that I won it, they're just like, I can't believe that that happens. Like, the odds are tiny.
The odds are indeed very tiny. But Peter, let me ask you, if I understand correctly, Annabelle is a college graduate and she has skills that could be useful in the United States. Why not instead pursue an employment-based green card?
The waiting game here, even for employment-based visas, is a factor. Now, there's certain sectors within the employment visa. One is reserved for Nobel laureates, basically. If you're the cream of the crop, you might be able to get in pretty quickly. Then there's a category for people with advanced degrees, PhDs, master's degrees. But for people like Annabelle, a run-of-the-mill college graduate, you know, very nice lady, it's a hard journey.
Right. It didn't sound like she had an employer sponsor here in the United States either. Right. Okay. Well, I mean, we're having this conversation because of the ongoing controversies around any sort of immigration reform. So help us put the story of the state of legal immigration and green cards into the context of the bigger debate that's going on.
Right. Because any discussion about comprehensive immigration reform is going to revolve at least partially about who gets this pathway to permanent residency. Conversations about increasing the employment visas, for instance, have been on the table. The bill that they passed last year was trying to increase the amount of employment visas available to foreign students who get their degrees in the United States. So that would make that category quite a bit wider. There's a lot of conversation about making the non-skilled employment visa category a little bit bigger. But as you know, in Washington, D.C., on this topic, we're not getting very much headway. We know the president has decided that he is going to take some sort of action on his own. Mm-hmm. Well, now the president can do some things, but most of what the president can do is only for temporary relief. He can sort of stay deportation for large groups of people. It could affect a lot of people. But the president is going to have a hard time giving green cards away without any help from Congress.
Right. Here and now is Peter O'Dowd. Thanks so much.
Thank you.